Yes, indeed. Got some big events coming your way this week as the PGA Tour in Napa, California for the Pro Core Championship and the DP World Tour at Wentworth for the BMW PGA Championship outside of London, U.S. and European Ryder Cup team members getting some key preparation. And this is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. So we got some big tournaments this week. And some big news today. There was a sighting of a certain 15-time major champ swinging golf clubs at the Nexus Cup Liberty National, New Jersey. Tiger, Tiger Woods, y'all.
It looks pretty good. Is it a little too late for one of those captain's picks for Bethpage Black, Damon? He's got a pretty good record out there.
And a pretty good golf swing. He put a move on that one, Eamon. What do you think?
I think he's starting to tease us all again.
All right, from the hopes of Tiger Woods to the reality that is the Ryder Cup. We're going to kick off this Tuesday with a look back at 2023. You're gonna love this. Eamon, you remember under the helm of Luke Donald, Team Europe defeats the United States 6.5, 11.5, got off to that 4-0 start on Friday morning in foursomes and never looked back. And how about this? The 2025 European team running it back. Same captain in Luke Donald and nearly the exact same team except for swapping out one Højgaard twin for another. Got Rasmus 2025. Now, European Ryder Cup team members have put up some strong performances over the past month. In August, 45-year-old Justin Rose won the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs in Memphis, FedEx St. Jude Championship, beat J.J. Spahn in a playoff for his 12th career title, Eamon, and looked very sharp in doing so.
And those English celebrations didn't have time to conclude before they got loud again. Damon, just a couple of weeks later, it was Tommy Fleetwood. He got his first PGA Tour victory. Came with the Tour Championship at Eastlake in Atlanta, and with that, Tommy was crowned the FedEx Cup champion. And the winning keeps going for the European team. Just on Sunday, Rory McIlroy got his first win since earning that green jacket back in April. This incredible Eagle Cup in the 72nd hole forced a playoff at the Amgen Irish Open. He went on to win in the third extra hole. 20th victory on the DP World Tour, second in front of a home crowd.
Look at those scenes on Sunday. My goodness, as Rory gets it done for a second time in the Irish Open right now. Let's take a look at what's happening this week as the Rolex Series returns. 11 of 12 European Ryder Cup team members are in the field for the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Sepp Straka, the only team member not playing this week. Let's hear from some of the leaders of this European team.
It would obviously be great to bring the Ryder Cup back to these shores. And look, we know how difficult it's going to be. Like, we're under no illusions. I have complete confidence in Luke and his vice captains and the team that they've put together. And I keep saying this, we have a massive opportunity to do something that not a lot of Ryder Cup teams say that they've done. I've been lucky enough to be part of one Ryder Cup team that won away. We've got a lot of people within that team, myself and Justin Rose that are playing, but then obviously you've got Francesco and Luke on a vice captain side that were there, that played, so we have experience in knowing what it takes, but I think we all know it's going to be very, very difficult. And you're not just playing the 12 American golfers, you're also trying to get past the crowd, and that's the same thing that they feel when they come here and play in Europe. So it definitely gives you a bit of an inbuilt advantage to start the week, and that's something that we're going to have to overcome.
I think that is the nature of the Ryder Cup, and that's what makes the Ryder Cup so special, is that it does sort of transcend golf a little bit. It sort of becomes a global sporting event. So I think rightfully so that it's talked about that way for the build-up. You know, it's once every 2 years, as we all know, and there's a lot of anticipation for it. And I feel like even for me as a player, it's sort of a month-long process. You know, the moment I got picked to play in Rome, it was like it was Ryder Cup week. You know, and that every, you know, like I've said before, every meal, every workout, every practice session had the Ryder Cup in mind. Of course, we don't know exactly the environment in Bethpage, other than it's going to be something we've never faced before. So it's hard to prepare for that. And this is our last chance to kind of put a scorecard in the hand and prepare and go through those sort of mental checklists that make you feel more comfortable in the heat of competition. So this is a very important tournament, but at the same time, it's the BMW PGA Championship, one that I dearly love to win. So
I think every Ryder Cup that you play, right at the end of it, you're all like, how good would it be if we just, let's just keep the team and let's just go again. And you always say that without really, like, you know, you obviously don't mean it because it never happens. But this time, yeah, to have us all together, to have that experience, to have like the team connection that we had last time moving on to this one, I think, you know, hopefully it will only be, you know, serve as a good thing for us, serve as an advantage. I'm excited to be with all the guys. And I think you... Yeah, of course, every time the team's set, you know, you couldn't ask for a better 12 guys, and we're just all ready to go into that together and have another pop at trying to get the Ryder Cup.
And look, this tournament is obviously a huge tournament of its own right, but you're all hopping on a plane together on Sunday evening and heading out for the team trip to Bethpage. I know just how important the one ahead of Rome was, so what are the anticipation levels for that?
But the same. Luckily, the team is similar, right? It's same phase, different name with the Højgaards, I guess. So, and Rasmus was a part of the Ryder Cup as well last time, right? As he was there with Nikolai and Thomas. So, I think we are already a step ahead in that sense than we were in Rome. But I'm sure we're gonna do some of the same little routines that we did in Rome that I think got the team really close together. Mm-hmm. We're all gonna be fairly tired Monday morning, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun to spend those 2 days together and get an idea of what the week is going to be like.
And here are some of those notable first round tee times at Wentworth, starting 3:35 a.m. Eastern time. Justin Rose going out with Tommy Fleetwood, Billy Horschel, former winner, defending champion of this event, Hideki playing with Ludwig, Matt Fitzpatrick, Victor Hovland, Rasmus Højgaard, Marco Penge, he's been successful recently on that tour, Bob McIntyre, Tyrrell Hatton, Ryan Fox, and then look at the Gangbusters here at 7:45 a.m. Eastern Time. Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, and John Rahm. So, Damon, what do you think here when you look at those tee times? Is this a harbinger of potential pairings at Bethpage Black, or is Luke Donald trying to throw Captain Keegan Bradley off the scent by just throwing them out there?
I don't think that Luke is thinking about Keegan yet. I think he has a plan.
I think he's thought about nothing but Keegan for the last 2 years.
I think he has a system, a winning system. He knows what worked last time, and I think he's focused on putting those guys together in the best position possible to get the victory. You think he's worried about Keegan Bradley right now in terms of getting those guys on the same page?
Well, I'm sure Keegan's probably going to throw some of his guys together in the tee times out in Napa this week as well. So it's a little kind of misinformation going out there from both sides.
A lot of chess moves happening already. One thing we do know, that Rory is the headliner this week coming off that win at the Irish Open. He spoke on a number of topics today, including his schedule and a long ago conversation with a 20-time Grand Slam champion.
I had a chat with Roger Federer, a few years ago, sort of at the end of his career, and he was saying, you know, he wanted to go and play a lot of the places that he could never play during his career. So, you know, some of the smaller 250 events, just because not a lot of people had seen him play tennis before. And, you know, so I think as time goes on and I get to this stage in my career, I can see, I get excited about that, about doing that sort of thing. Like, I don't want to be grinding out here when I'm 50 years of age and, like, you know, I'll turn up and play the majors and have a nice time. But, like, I, you know, whenever I'm done, I'm done. Whenever that is, that's certainly not right now. But I'm certainly closer to that point than I was in 2007 when I turned pro. So, at this point, I want to play golf where I want to play golf. I want to play in the locations that I love to go to, and I want to play the majors in the Ryder Cup. Like, that's it. And so, you know, I'm not going to be bound by minimums or anything else. Like, I'll obviously do my bit to make sure that I keep my membership and all that at the certain tours, but but I'm going to play where I want to play.
So if you're Guy Kinnings, the CEO of the European Tour, and listening to that, you're very happy. If, on the other hand, you're Brian Rolapp and the CEO of the PGA Tour, that's a little bit of a warning shot right there in my mind, because it feels as though there is the potential that this generation of players could kind of hurtle towards being freelancers.
Right.
That they play where they want, when they want. And the Rory was very pointed there to say that he will do what it requires to maintain memberships of his various tours. But eventually, the schedule required to do that is going to start to rub these guys the wrong way. In the United States, it's that 15 event minimum. And that's his way, I think, of telling the PGA Tour that the kind of protectionist policies that have existed for a long time may not be fit for purpose as far as he sees it going in the years to come, and that the PGA Tour itself ought to take a broader, more global view of the game right now, because, you know, he's going to go play in India later this year for the first time. He's going to go back to the Australian Open for the first time in a decade and a half. And those are events that are DP World Tour events. And he's been a long time advocate for this idea that there ought to be a more global, unified tour in this game. PGA Tour has never really gone down that road. It's always been fairly domestic, fairly insular. Is there corporate support for it? I guess we're going to find out in time, and whether or not there's actually traction to build that business out. But if you're the PGA Tour and you're hearing that, it becomes another reason why you need a presence elsewhere in the world. Because when Roger Federer decided that he was going to go play smaller events, he was still playing under the umbrella of one tour. What Rory McIlroy is saying is that he's going to play more under events that are not currently aligned with the PGA Tour. Whether they're in future aligned with the PGA Tour is a matter for Brian Rolapp and his board.
Well, you would think that the PGA Tour would love those scenes that we saw in Ireland and want to replicate that, scenes that we saw a year ago when Bob McIntyre won the Scottish Open. Listen, Brian Rolapp comes from the National Football League, which for years never had international games. Now they have seven. You're talking about three in London. We already had a football game in Sao Paulo, Brazil, Dublin, Madrid, Berlin coming down the pike. The NFL isn't just a domestic product. It is a global product. And I would think Brian Rolapp, coming from the National Football League, now the CEO of the PGA Tour, would want to treat the PGA Tour in a global fashion as well. And it might be incumbent upon some of those players to start getting those frequent flyer miles and maybe playing in places that they haven't played before. And Rory has talked a lot about the need for a greater elevation and recognition of those national opens, for example.
And just as Rolapp didn't need every team to go play overseas, he doesn't need every player to go play overseas either. It doesn't really take much to elevate those events. Well, the US Ryder Cup team has its own training camp going of sorts this week, while the Europeans are doing it at Wentworth. 10 members of the 12-man squad for the US Ryder Cup team are in the field of the Pro 4 Championship in California. We'll get the latest on that coming up next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, Keegan Brantley ended all the fun. All that chatter we had around one question: was he going to be a playing captain at Bethpage Black? Well, the answer to that question came on August 27th.
I grew up wanting to play Ryder Cups. I grew up wanting to be fight alongside these guys. And it broke my heart not to play. Really did. Because, you work forever to make these teams. But ultimately, I was chosen to do a job. I was chosen to be the captain of this team. And my ultimate goal to start this whole thing was to be the best captain that I could be. And this is how I felt like I could do this. If we got to this point and I felt like, you know, the team was better with me on it, I was going to do that. I was going to do whatever I thought was best for this team. And I know 100% for certain that this is the right choice.
Keegan Bradley might want to change his name to All Business. Very serious and focused during that press conference when he completed his Ryder Cup team. There they are, 12 men looking to turn around that 11.5 loss in Rome a couple of years ago. Now, how about the players that are going to be playing this week at the Pro Core Championship? 10 of 12, Burns, Cantlay, English, Griffin, Henley, Morikawa, Scheffler, Spahn, Thomas, and Young, Bryson, and Xander are not playing this week. And right now we're joined by Rex Hoggard. He's on the ground out in Napa, California. So who's playing with who today? You got any insight on what we might see in a couple weeks?
I love that first block when you guys start picking apart what we might be seeing from each captain. It's the most magical time of the year when you start following those captain breadcrumbs. And certainly Keegan Bradley has laid a few of those today here in Napa, California. If you start looking at those 10 players who are here out of the 12 Americans, in the first group this morning, it was Harris English, Colin Morikawa, and Webb Simpson. He's a vice captain. They went out first as a threesome. They're playing together. Obviously, if you start looking at potential pairings as we get closer to Bethpage, specifically an alternate shot, which we'll have on Friday morning, Harris and Colin would make a good pairing. They hit a lot of fairways, hit a lot of greens. Colin is one of the best long iron players in the game, so that one's one to keep an eye on. But the pairing that really caught my attention was the second one out of the gates today. It was Scottie Scheffler, Russell Henley, J.J. Spahn, and Gary Woodland. Again, Gary Woodland being a vice captain in that group. I think it's safe to say, and I'm not reading between too many tea leaves here, that Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley will end up being paired together at Bethpage. They had an absolute excellent record last year at the President's Cup and played pretty well in Rome as well, so they seem like a likely pairing there. And then in the day's final group, it was Justin Thomas, Sam Burns, Cameron Young, and Patrick Cantlay. A couple things there. As you pointed out, Xander Schauffele is not in the field this week. It seems likely that Xander and Patrick are such good pairings historically that they would play together, but the rest of them are interesting. JT, being the most experienced member on the American team, he's probably a plug-and-play player when it comes to what Keegan Bradley is hoping to do. And then finally, Ben Griffin, who's also one of the 10 players on the team who's playing this week. He arrived a little late, but he's playing his practice round with Brant Snedeker, who is also one of Keegan Bradley's vice captains.
Rex, one of the two guys who isn't playing this week, obviously Bryson DeChambeau, not eligible to play PGA Tour events as a LIV member. How much are we going to see of him out there this week? I know he's going to show up for the team dinner, but is he going to see if the old credential still works, or is he going to try a disguise to slide past security?
I don't know if we'll see him at all actually on the golf course, but it is interesting. He's played here before. It's not as though it's a tour event he's not familiar with. But yes, Keegan Bradley did confirm to me that Bryson will be at the dinner tonight. And I was told from someone inside Bryson's camp that he's going to participate in everything they allow him to participate in. You've referred to this as maybe a training camp for the U.S. team. And I actually equate it maybe more to like an NFL combine, because if you look at what Keegan is doing this week, it's a normal tour event. Players are going through their normal steps. They want to win just like they do every week. But clearly the focus is on the Ryder Cup. And to sort of hammer that point home, Keegan Bradley is staying in a house very, very close to property with all of his vice captains. And Keegan told me that Bryson is invited to every event he wants to come to this week. Now, I don't know if that means to come out here on the golf course, but certainly each night the team is going to be encouraged to get together at that house and talk about what they hope to see at the Ryder Cup. And I think he'll be part of those conversations.
Rex, I know Xander Schauffele didn't have the 2025 that he wanted to, starting off with that intercostal rib injury. Why isn't he playing this week?
He had been a little coy, and he confirmed to the Associated Press, our colleague Doug Ferguson, earlier today, that actually his wife and he gave birth to the couple's first child. It's a baby boy named Victor just a few days ago. That's why he's not in the field this week. You look at sort of what the team is trying to do, and I was told by someone inside the team room that no one encourages players to come here and play here in Napa more to prepare for the Bethpage more than Xander Schauffele. So even though I'm sure he wishes he was here, clearly family is going to come first. And you guys pointed out that Keegan is here on property. He turned in his golf clubs this week. He's being a full captain. He was driving around in a golf cart and everything that he's going to be doing at Bethpage. And he was walking over the range this morning. He kind of smiled and said, "I'm going to work the range." And I said, "When's the last time you did that?" And he goes, "I can tell you exactly. I was 13 years old at the tour event in Hartford."
So much intrigue, and none of it's actually happening inside the ropes yet. We look forward to actually getting to the action in a couple of days. Thanks for the update, Rex.
Thanks.
All right, folks, stay with us because Stuart Hagestad, you know the name, been a staple on U.S. Walker Cup teams, and on Sunday earned the retaining point for the United States. He joins us coming up.
USA! 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 Woo!
Folks, we'll let you know that today is Thank a Golf Course Superintendent Day, an international effort to encourage all golfers to recognize those who are essential to golf's success. I want to recognize Sleepy Hollow Country Club, Briarcliff Manor, New York, beautiful spot. playground of the likes of the Ryder Cup, Cameron Young, Dave Young. How about Matthew Hegarty, Golf Channel? Jonathan Haywood, the golf course and grounds superintendent, course is always mint. How about Baltusrol Golf Club, grounds staff, all their hard work, wonderful members like Bob Ferguson, Terrell Evans. Wonderful spot in New Jersey. And speaking of New Jersey, but the team at Essex County Country Club, Chris sends out his best to Jason Thompson, a 31-year GCSAA member for years. Jason Thompson and his staff have made the county a premier golf course in New Jersey. It's been a hidden gem, but the word is getting out thanks to his dedication and hard work. And thanks for all you do, Big Jason. We're back on golf today. Wow. Hello, beautiful. Cypress Point, one of the iconic venues in the world, played host to the 50th edition of the Walker Cup last week as the United States took on GB and I. How about the 34-year-old Stuart Hagestad draining this putt on the 15th hole to solidify a 4-3 victory and clinch the crucial 13th point to retain the Walker Cup? How about that reaction? Team USA wins the Walker Cup in dominant fashion in singles, beating GB and I 17-9. The win marks the fifth straight for the U.S. as the series now stands 49-1.
And how about this graphic? You know you're doing something right in this game if you find yourself closing in on a Bobby Jones record. This is the highest singles win percentage in the Walker Cup with a minimum of four matches. You see the fourth name on that list there, Stuart Hagestad, 87.5%. Seven wins in eight singles matches. And we're pleased to have Stuart Hagestad join us now. Stuart, congratulations on the performance. I'm curious what the celebrations look like, because unlike some of your teammates, you're old enough to celebrate legally, but as evidenced where you are now, you do actually have a job to go back to as well. So you had to kind of celebrate responsibly.
It was a great celebration. It wasn't as, we'll say, we didn't go quite as deep as we did at the Dunvegan a couple of years ago. But yeah, I was hungover in a lot of other ways yesterday morning and most of yesterday. So yeah, look at that. What a special week. Just honored to kind of, you know, represent Team USA, to be a part of the Walker Cup, and to share that moment right there with our teammates. Pretty cool.
Well, you earned every single libation with your great play. You know, one thing you said before the week, Stuart, was that you wouldn't know how to describe this team until after the matches were done. So now that it is over, how would you describe what made this group unique?
A little spicy, very rambunctious. You know, this was a different group, and I think I, whether I meant to or not, I think I described it pretty well with Brentley or shortly thereafter. This is a group that was going to come out. They were going to be throwing punches whether they landed or not. They're very young, but they're very talented. And I cannot wait to see what they do for the rest of their career, because there's a lot of horsepower there. They're very, very, don't think they know how good they are. And I'm excited for when they do realize how good they are, some of the amazing things that they'll be able to accomplish.
Do you feel like a leader when you walk into that team room, Stuart, regardless of what the playing record is of the other guys, just simply by age and experience, do you assume a leadership role?
I think depending on, first off, thank you. To even be asked that conversation is pretty humbling when you kind of sit there and think about it. But I think when you think of maybe leadership, I add a little bit of a different perspective just simply because I am older and how I've kind of seen the dance or seen the movie before, so to speak. I kind of know what the cadence of the week, you know, looks like and feels like. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on outside of just the golf. So, you know, to be able to answer questions, you know, kind of maybe a little bit more thoughtfully or with some direction, you know, with some of the younger guys about, you know, some of the feelings that you're going to have, whether it be on the first tee or, you know, kind of having a better idea of how to conserve energy throughout the week, or even it's just as simple as like knowing how to tie a tie, like before certain events. Like there's just so many little moments throughout the week that I think that, you know, I was able to maybe help with. But from a golf standpoint, they're so good. I learned, you know, a few of these ago just to, you know, answer the questions if they ask them. But beyond that, just, you know, let the horses run, stay out of their way.
Stuart, you were on that incredible team in 2017 that had the likes of Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Maverick McNealy, Cameron Champ. And here we are 8 years later, and you describe the horses that were in that team room with you. Has the game evolved even in that short period of time? Are you seeing things now with these young players that even that team couldn't quite do?
Totally, totally. It's a great question. It's an amazing observation, too. When I was 25, I was one of, if not the longest mid-am. And I have kind of seen since then, and I'll tie it back to that team. But I didn't get clipped off the tee very often. And I think if you look at the younger generation, whether it's the better athletes thing, or we don't need to get into the ball, roll the ball. Let's avoid that for the sake of my answer. But in the sense of, I think that the kids now are much more comfortable hitting driver at an earlier age. And statistically, I think I definitely came from a generation where we were kind of taught to, you know, swing in rhythm and stay in balance. And now it's a little bit of like, well, why wouldn't I hit driver? Like, let's be as close to the green as possible. Like, let's, you know, try and bang it up there as far as we can. So when you look at the 2017 team, incredibly talented. I think from a golf IQ or traditional golf IQ standpoint, maybe they were a touch further along in the most, again, traditional way. But today, I think that they have, I would say, more horsepower and more of the skill set required, and that is taught and normalized at an earlier age to maybe have success in the pro ranks.
When you look at the places where you have competed in Walker Cups, Stuart, you've got LACC, you've got Hoylake, Seminole, the old course, Cypress Point. That's a heck of a bucket list right there. But does the venue matter to the player? Once you step on the tee, does the stage matter as a competitor that you're performing on? I know it does to the fans. I'm just curious if it does to the players.
Totally. Well, first and foremost, like, I am a fan as well, right? Like, I love watching golf as much as you two do, as much as all the fans at home watching this program do. I'm a total golf sicko. I'm a golf nerd. I look at Cypress Point and I have the same feelings of reverence for Cypress that I had when I was younger, kind of just beginning to discover, you know, all these different amazing venues and kind of cathedrals of the game. I think that the USGA does a really good job of not just talking the talk, but walking the walk, that they want their USGA championships to be celebrated and for the players to have a tremendous amount of pride in not just where they play, but if they're fortunate enough where they've won their championships. As a player in the moment, there's definitely a little bit of, for me, I don't do a great job of kind of like interacting with the crowd, so to speak. I know that some people are really good at that. I've always just found it a little bit easier to kind of keep the head down, keep the feet moving. So I think that the grass is always greener in the sense that I look at, you know, maybe friends or, you know, other players, and they see the venue in the sense of what it is, you know, one of these great cathedrals of the game. But when you're in the moment playing, you're not thinking about that as much as you are just trying to beat the guy in front of you.
Stuart, watching you guys perform over the weekend, and when I watch the Ryder Cup or Solheim Cup team events in general, I feel like there are more long putts made, more hole outs, more incredible kind of pinch me moments. Am I crazy, or do you think that the play is actually elevated in team events versus your week-to-week stroke play events?
You know, I thought the same thing. You know, isn't that crazy? I feel like in all of these big team events or, you know, kind of going towards, you know, certainly, you know, Sunday at the Masters kind of has, you know, a lot of those same themes, right? There's a lot of pins that are kind of in bold positions or in places that provide a tremendous amount of excitement, you know, for the viewer, but it also allows the players to go out and to make a charge. I think you need to give a tremendous amount of credit to Ben Kimble and his staff, you know, for all the preparation that goes into this, because I'm sure that there is an element of how can we put pins in places where once you are on the putting surface and you hit good putts, a lot of the balls maybe kind of help feed towards the pin, or at least if nothing else from the fairway, allow for more birdie chances and for more excitement. Like, I look at this putt here, you know, this is on 15 to close out the match. I was probably 5 or 6 feet closer to the hole and more towards the ocean than Elliott Baker, who I was playing. His putt broke from right to left and mine broke left to right. But again, like, that's an example of what I was kind of trying to express there, where the pin was in a little bit of a bold position. But I really do think that the USGA and the RNA, when it's over in Great Britain and Ireland, do a great job, of course, set up for allowing for that type of excitement to take place.
Well, it's no exaggeration, Stuart, to say that you are demographically edging closer to the captain demographic than you are the player demographic. What have you learned from your captains that you're going to use when you inevitably get that job yourself?
Well, thank you for pointing out that I have more gray hairs now than I did at 25 for my first one of these. But I think that every captain has a different way of going about it. They all have different leadership styles. They all have different personalities. They all have different experiences. And I think that's great. I look up to each and every one of them, you know, in different ways. You know, Spider was more of an elder statesman. Nathaniel was very fun and kept the team very, very loose and, you know, ready for the event. Mike McCoy, you know, is kind of just like a USGA stalwart and certainly more of kind of the journeyman that did everything he could to get that picture, you know, on the Swilcan Bridge because he didn't have that experience as a player. You know, and then as far as Nathan is concerned, he's definitely a younger captain and he was able to relate, I think, a little bit more to the players just simply because of his age. But I think that, you know, that's something that, you know, all of us in every aspect of life, we get better at in terms of maybe our own personal leadership style or the way that we communicate. And I'm sure that that's something that will be a little bit more refined as we get older.
5 Walker Cup wins. We wish you 5 more before you grab the walkie-talkie and become Captain Stewart. Congratulations. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you for having me. Anytime. Great to see you guys.
Here are some images of that decisive U.S. win at the weekend. Only a year until the next Walker Cup, though, as they get it back on an even year schedule. 2026, it's at Lahinch in Ireland.